M6, number 4B.
So that finally we can see, all right, then in that oneness of being there is nothing ever going on, but that mind, capital mind, manifests itself out of itself. Word. That mind expresses itself and manifests itself through no other channel but mind itself. It does not need another channel but the one. So that mind manifests itself out of itself, where? Through itself, through no other channel but through the whole of mind, Christ. That mind manifests itself, never as a single, isolated idea, but what it can manifest is always the whole of God. God cannot manifest a part of God. How could he do that? Therefore, every manifestation, every demonstration would be the whole of God, Christianity, and would always be there for the whole glory of God, for the glory of mind. And you never lose the term mind. Whatever goes on in the fourfold operation is always mind. Mind as the cause of manifestation, mind as the channel through which it manifests itself, mind as the demonstration or expression or reflection of itself is still mind. It's never smaller than mind. And it has always one big purpose and one aim for the glory of mind and of never anything smaller than mind. If we have that, then we have got into the rhythm of the oneness of being. Then we can see that mind is all, in all. Yes? Well? Okay. Let's go to point 9. And just let's consider as a preparatory work for the next days, for the chapters in the textbook, just to get acquainted with that sense of oneness, of not splitting up principle and idea. If we consider point 9, let's say the oneness of the seven synonymous terms. The oneness of the seven synonymous terms. Just have a little survey on that, not going too deep into it. If we can see that principle and idea is one, how does that show itself forth? If we contemplate this through the seven synonymous term. If I have mind, then I would have to see that mind's idea is one. Therefore I could see, for instance, that in mind, cause, mind is the cause, that cause and effect is one. That there is no time lag in between cause and effect. That therefore in every cause lies already the effect. And that we cannot have a cause without the effect. There is no effect without the cause. So that we feel that the moment mind causes something, it already affects something. In spirit, principle and idea is one, spirit and spirit's idea is one, I begin to see really that God and nature is one. There is not God and then the nature of God. It's all one substance, and that's all the substance there is. Not God has a substance and creation has a substance. Because the substance of God is the substance of nature, of the spiritual nature, naturally. In soul, we have to see something very clearly about the identity of soul, namely that we do not split up in soul subject and object, that these are not two identities, that we have an identity called the subject and an identity called the object, but that, as we have seen, subject and object is one. That subject and object is one. And we see that very clearly, the consciousness we have is the experience we have. We cannot have one kind of consciousness and another kind of experience. Just not possible. Subject and object is one. That's why Schelling calls identity, calls the reality at the deepest level where subject and object is one. So we can never feel, well, we can have a kind of a consciousness, but we do not know what kind of an experience we have. Nor can we say we have a kind of experience and I don't know from where it comes from. It always comes from a subjective consciousness. In principle, naturally, we have that principle and idea is one because it's the co-relationship between principle and idea. I cannot have principle without idea. I cannot have idea without principle. They are one. If I have life, I can see life is one. It's both the infinite individuality, singular, and the infinite individualities. The infinite has an infinite individuality, which means infinite individualities. So whenever there is an infinite, is one of the infinite individualities under consideration, I know it is the individuality of God Himself. Therefore, every idea is as big as its origin, as the infinite one. Or you take truth. Truth is one. This is very important. Because we think we have a consciousness, and we have to have a consciousness that is somehow aligned to God's consciousness. Well, this is duality. Either we have a divine consciousness or we have no consciousness. Because we see truth has its own consciousness. Truth is consciousness. And that consciousness is my consciousness. There is no consciousness of God and the consciousness of man. That duality doesn't exist. That God has a consciousness and man has a consciousness. And that those two consciousnesses try to get together in some way and commune together. There are not two consciousnesses that agree on something or disagree on something. There is just one consciousness, and that we have to see. Or else we consider God as a big guy with a beard who has a consciousness. What is called truth consciousness is consciousness, and that is God's consciousness and our consciousness. It isn't like in psychology where we have a subconscious and a collective unconscious and all these things, all kinds of stratas of consciousness. Here in truth, when we come to the divine truth, we just can see there is consciousness. Full stop. There is consciousness. Truth's own consciousness. No matter who entertains that, if it's God who entertains it or man entertains it, it's still the same consciousness. Principle and idea, one. And naturally, in love, we have that terrific sense which we have been talking about, that there is one love. And what does it mean that there is one love? Namely, love is always a sense of all-inclusiveness, and therefore shows the oneness of love is in that, that the whole and its parts are one. That the whole and its parts are always one. That every part is not a section, but an aspect of the whole. Then I have a sense of love. when I see you, see, like Jacob when he met Esau, he said, I could see you, the aspect, the part, as if I would see God's face. Something like that in the English. I don't know how it is, but something like that it runs. I've seen thee as if I had seen the face of God, or something it runs. Huh? I see you, but I see God. Huh? I see the part, but I see the whole. If Jesus, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father. That's love. See the part, and in the part the whole. So that the part is not the section, but only an aspect of the whole. Yeah? Well, let's take the seven synonymous terms again and see how we could misunderstand the oneness of each synonymous term. See, take again, for instance, mind. We say mind knows all. It's the all-knowing mind. Therefore, we can see that man, who has that mind, which is the same mind as God, can never be a knower. Man can never be a knower. One who knows. Huh? It's always mind that knows. It's not man that actually knows. It's always the mind of God, which is the mind of man that knows. So can you see when we approach a subject, and that is the very first subject in the chapter on prayer, that we can see not we know God, not we can know God, but the mind that is God knows God. We are not a knower. Or you take spirit. Spirit has an infinite reflection. And it would be the false concept of the one spirit if we would feel we are the reflector. Because she says man reflects God, we have to be very careful that this does not mean we are the reflector. Because only spirit can reflect. And it takes away that sense that humanly we have to reflect God. In soul, where we have the one soul, soul identifies, we can see that man is never an identifier. It's always soul that identifies. And we are not an identifier. And we like sometimes to think that we have to identify ourselves properly, which is all right, but then how are we going to do it? We cannot do it as an identifier. We can only do it by seeing that the soul, the one soul, can identify. The soul of God is the soul of man. It's the same soul, and that identifies. We are not an identifier. Or in principle, we very often think that we are a demonstrator. We can never be a demonstrator if there is only principle demonstrating itself. Therefore, the principle that is God is the principle of man, and that principle is demonstrating itself. So we are not a demonstrator. In life we can see that we are not the individualizer. We would like to individualize our lives and see that we bring out our own individuality. And if we are not basing ourselves on the oneness of one life, then we are tempted to be an individualizer of our lives. And then all what we get are idiosyncrasies and not individuality. So let that life which is God, which is our life, individualize itself. In truth, we feel very much that if there is one truth, and that truth is consciousness, then that consciousness of truth is our consciousness, and we can never be a conscious ego, a consciousness, a consciousnesser, one that tries to become conscious of. It's truth that is conscious of itself. And therefore it's the truth that is God, it's the truth of man, and that truth is conscious of itself. And naturally in love we are tempted to be the fulfiller of our life, the fulfiller of everything. We try to fulfill things. Whereas if you would see there is only one love that is God is the love of man, love, capital L, of man, and therefore love fulfills everything. Man can never be a fulfiller. And in this way we rectify something that is very innate in us, you see, that we are what politically is called a maker. I don't know if you know that term, they call it the Chancellor in Germany a maker. One who thinks he can do everything out of himself. So we are not the knower, we are not the maker, we are not the reflector, we are not an identifier, we are not the demonstrator, we are not an individualizer, we are not the consciousnesser, and we are not the fulfiller. We have that sense within ourselves, we have separated us from the synonymous terms and have disrupted, so to say, the oneness of being. Yes? All right. Let's go to point 10. And let's see, in this sense of oneness that we must have a right sense of oneness and of unity and not a distorted sense of oneness. Just a sense of oneness that is that would be distorted naturally would not be a right sense of oneness. So I speak about the right sense of unity and the distorted sense of unity. It's still oneness, it's still unity, but we can have a right sense of it and it's distorted. Up to now I have shown oneness in contrast to dualism, and now I want to show oneness in contrast to a false sense of oneness. So that actually it would be analyzing, so to say, the inner meaning when oneness is oneness and when we have a false sense of oneness. And that is especially important when it is brought down to the human plane, to what then is called unity, oneness that becomes unity. That there we usually can have a right sense of unity and a wrong sense of unity. So that the term unity alone is no proof that we mean oneness. That we can misuse the term unity, and this is dangerous because in the world at large, unity is considered to be a positive quality, to be a positive factor, and this is naturally not true. It always it's always necessary to analyze first what is understood under the term unity. So if we take Mrs. Eddy's works and analyze what she is considering to be unity, we'll see that in one sense she is all for unity, and in one sense she's all for disunity. In most cases in the prose work, she will speak just in a general way about the unity in Christian Science. And therefore we have to be clear that she speaks about what she speaks and not about what she does not speak. She speaks about the unity that exists in Christian Science, and Christian Science is a system and not a movement. Therefore, she does not speak of the unity among Christian Scientists. Unity in Christian Science is for her a unity of God and man. She speaks mostly, a great number of her references are about that unity of God and man, about the unity of mind, capital M, the unity of spirit, capital S, unity of truth, and the Trinity in unity. You can see that sense of unity, which is foremost in her thought, is all about the unity of the teaching of Christian Science and not the unity of Christian Scientists. That has first to be stated clearly. She says that unity is the essential nature of Christian Science. And we see that naturally, that in Christian Science there is one principle and one idea, principle and idea is one. She says its principle is one, and to demonstrate the divine one demands oneness of thought and action. So this is her kind of unity, that it demands really the oneness of thought and action. And so she has the various ways of bringing out the unity in Christian Science, like the unity of the spirit and the letter must be one, that they should not be separated, that the one needs the other, the one without the other is not complete. The letter without the spirit does only lead as far and no further. The spirit without the letter only leads as far and not further. They both come very soon to a stop. Only when both are wedded together, they really cross-seminate each other enough to be a support and a help for the further unfoldment. Then here and there she speaks about the unity among brethren. Now she comes to people, the unity between people. And then she comes to the unity of people, she's not quite sure anymore if that is any good. And the few references she has where she really is very much for the unity among brethren is usually when she acknowledges a gift that she has got from a church or from an association. So she's very glad that the congregation together were happy and united in being of one spirit, that they would send Mrs. Eddy a nice gift. And you just can't see how to what level it comes when she speaks about the unity of people. And she acknowledges a gift from the Chicago churches, and she just is happy about the unity, about the bond of perfection, and so on. But then somehow she's not quite sure if this unity among brethren is any good. And you can see that it shouldn't really be very good, because unity among people is anyway a wrong starting point, a wrong basis. In Christian Science we have to have unity of principle and idea, and not between people that are a counterfeit of principle. Therefore, she deals with that sense also in a different way than just to be very happy about the unity among brethren, and she takes up the sense that when it comes to great intellectual wrestlings, which is necessary in any science, when that happens, that then suddenly there is another unity which is much better, namely the disunity among the brethren. She says that other minds are made dormant by animal magnetism, and the weak stems is in a state of semi-individuality with a mental haziness which admits of no intellectual culture or spiritual growth. She can see that not everybody is in that state where they admit intellectual wrestlings and admit spiritual culture, and therefore there can be no unity among people. Drifting, she says, into intellectual wrestlings, and that's necessary in a science, that there is intellectual wrestlings necessary if we are not just fooled by animal magnetism and put to sleep by animal magnetism, that we do not want to go forward. Drifting into intellectual wrestlings, we should agree to disagree. That would be a real sense. And not to try to agree where there is nothing to be agreed upon. That we should agree to disagree, and then she makes a terrific statement after a semicolon and says, and this harmony, that is harmony, to agree to disagree about intellectual wrestlings, and this harmony would anchor the church in more spiritual latitudes, and so fulfill its destiny. By golly, let's have dissension. Let's have it. If it's put on good ground, on intellectual wrestling, on spiritual growth, we cannot have unity among people, or a science goes right down the drain. Every science goes right down the drain. If there is only unity among people, it goes down the drain. It must go down the drain, because it would have to rest then on the weakest part of that unity. Whereas we should build on the strongest part. And that means that we have to separate from those who are in the haziness and cannot think above their platform. How has any science developed through dissension? Right from Jesus dissenting with the Jews, the Reformators dissenting with the Roman Catholic Church, Mrs. Eddy dissenting with the Protestant Church, Mr. Dawley dissenting with Boston. Dissension is positive if it's built on science. And that eternal cry of having unity, unity among people is just animal magnetism trying to put the whole veil on the wonderful progress of the idea. So, she says, I once thought that in unity was human strength, but have grown to know that human strength is weakness, that unity is divine might, giving to human power and peace.